somebody asked me last week what it feels like, and just spontaneously I said, I feel like the Dementors have left the room, and we've all realized there's light again and there's happiness again. So for anybody who's read any Harry Potter, they'll know that reference. But in reality, it is amazing down here to have a progressive agenda back in front of us, and one that reflects the voters' desires of Washington State. You know, a supermajority of Washingtonians believe in immigrants' rights and LGBTQ rights and pro-choice and protecting the environment and standing up for justice and social justice and things like the Voting Rights Act. And all of those things are now moving forward. Just in our first week in session down here in Olympia, Democrats introduced the Voting Rights Act, the Equal Pay Act, three different bills protecting and advancing women's reproductive choice, numerous bills protecting the environment, including a comprehensive package protecting the Salish Sea, and a handful of bills on climate action, including a full carbon tax, making polluters pay. And so the agenda across the board really reflects, I believe, Washington's values, and it's time for us to govern and not be obstinate.
You know, you started talking about LGBTQ rights and some social issues. Boy, we have faced some pretty difficult bills in the past couple of years, like the discriminatory bathroom bill. And it's really nice to see that some bills are being introduced the other way. I wanted to ask specifically, one of the bills you're priming is about LGBTQ elder care.
Yeah, I read a report 2 years ago now, and it was really sad that this bill didn't even get a hearing under the Republican majority. But I read a report that showed that some of the highest levels of discrimination against LGBTQ members of our communities are in elder care facilities. And it was just shocking to me. And so we started looking into it and working with staff and stakeholders and some of the folks who run these facilities and work at these facilities. We've come up with comprehensive legislation that requires training of all staff at these facilities so that they respect everybody with love and kindness and equality.
And that hopefully isn't too expensive of a bill. People will probably ask if that costs a lot of money, that training.
No, it does not. No, it does not. Training wouldn't be on the employee. The burden of the training and the cost of the training would not be on the employee. It's part of the provider's situation. And so it works out well. And I've worked it out with some of the owners.
So I know we're going to talk about some of the other issues that everybody always talks about with legislators, but I wanted to focus on a couple of other things that we don't hear as much about. The other thing I noticed that you're sponsoring is a bill about homeless college students.
Yeah, actually, I have several bills. So I am the new chair of higher education and workforce development. And in that role, when I decided to take on that committee chairmanship, I found myself in a place, and I love to challenge myself, and I love to continue to learn. And so it's a very exciting challenge for me to be a chair of a committee that I've not previously chaired, and not, while I've been passionate about higher education and workforce development, I have not been a lead on those issues. So I went to my staff and many others at different universities and CTCs and apprenticeship programs, and I started asking the question of, you know, what should we be looking at? But I also brought my passion to the table. And so several people in the last week have looked at all the bills I've been dropping, and they said, well, this is not your typical agenda. You know, where are you going? And what I said is affordability and access to college and to apprenticeships and to careers is my focus. And that means affordability and access for everyone. So a bunch of data was put in front of me showing that foster children and homeless children are far less likely to go to college. And when they do go to college, they are far less likely to finish. So I started looking at what are the obstacles and the barriers for these kids that are in place that are stopping them from going to college. And some of it was stuff that, you know, folks that have it don't necessarily think about it, but just a place to shower, a place to keep your stuff. It's really important. And so what I found with homeless children that I spoke to was that many of them, they would be embarrassed to go to school because they hadn't been able to take a shower in days. And they also, when they were in class, they didn't have a home where they could put the few items that they still have in their life. And so they were afraid they would be stolen or they would lose them. And so looking at lockers and showers for our homeless population so that when they go to school, they can feel good about themselves and they can focus on learning as opposed to focusing on whether or not their gear is going to be there when they get out. The other thing that came to my attention was this incredible program, Passport to College, which is set up for foster children. And it's a wraparound program that provides advice and services starting at the age of 16 years old, so when these kids are in high school, for foster kids. And we know data shows that this program really works. It's very successful. And kids that go through this program and have those support services are far more likely to go to college. And so in looking at that, I said, well, if this program is so great, why don't we expand it to homeless kids? And then in speaking to folks who run the program, they were saying that all of their data shows that if those wraparound services started earlier than 16, that they would be even more powerful. And so we're bringing the age down to 13, and we're expanding it to homeless kids. So now this program will be available to homeless children and foster children, and starting at age 13, which the data shows will be far more important. I took it a step further, recognizing that not all children go to college, and college isn't right for everybody. People learn in different ways, and we have some incredible apprenticeship programs around the state, and we're actually looking at expanding those using a model from Switzerland that's very, very successful, that brings business to the table and so on. And so what I started looking at is, instead of it being Passport to College, let's make it Passport to Career. Let's make it a program that helps foster kids and homeless kids not just go to college, but maybe they want to go into an apprenticeship. And so really the goal is giving folks a career that they can be proud of, a stable income that they can be proud of. And so whether that's through apprenticeships or college, the program now, when this bill passes, and I hope that it will allow services, this incredible program, to be available for homeless kids and foster kids, and whether they go to an apprenticeship or for college, and starting at an earlier age, so that it will be even more successful.
I think one of the most innovative things, at least from what I'm hearing, is the challenging the maybe notion and trying to lead certain groups or certain classes of young people toward just a technical future, and really kind of giving the choice back to them.
Yeah, I think it's important. It's really important. You know, as I said a moment ago, people learn in different ways. And if we think that college is the path for everybody, I think we're naive. It was an incredible opportunity for me and for many, but it's not the only opportunity. And
Absolutely.
There are incredible programs and jobs and really good jobs that you can secure through apprenticeship programs. And in the apprenticeship program, then you're being paid while you're learning the trade, which is also really important. Just making sure that all options are available for everybody, and that we are motivated by kindness and respect and dignity, and that means that we are leading this effort with a motivation that says we will make sure that every single Washingtonian has access to the programs that make them a better person. The Student Loan Bill of Rights, to make sure that the crushing debt that our college students are leaving college with is not there in the future. DACA, making sure our dreamers have access to college and careers. And again, that goes back to all Washingtonians. I don't care where you were born or when you came here.
Yeah, I think this is a fantastic new direction for you, Senator. And
thank you.
You know, I know you're a dad. I know you've always cared about youth issues, but people still probably typecast you as the environment guy, and you haven't forgotten some environment bills. I know that you're working on reducing Atlantic salmon permits, and that's really powerful. But also, I saw something about orca captivity I wanted to ask you about.
I have a package of bills called the Salish Sea Protection Act, and those bills include, one, a vastly sweeping bill on oil spills protection and preparedness. And so that one is making sure that our marine waters, our Salish Sea, are protected from the massive amount of oil that's being transmitted across. And the second one is one, as you mentioned, that bans invasive net pen aquaculture of Atlantic salmon, which is a major threat to our ecosystem, and not just the escapements like we saw on Cypress Island this summer, but the day-in, day-out impact of these things is tremendous and detrimental to the future of our Salish Sea. Then I have another bill which is a protection bill for orca whales specifically. And so that gets into, you know, we know that there's three impacts to our orca whales. One is toxins, two is lack of food, and three is the constant noise pollution and from boats just chasing them all day long. And we know that these animals, these magnificent creatures, they hunt and they communicate through echolocation. So this constant noise is really harmful to them. And so this bill would put a new enforcement vessel on the water full-time when those whales are present. Because we do know when you have blue lights on the water, just like on the street, people behave better and they obey the laws. And then it also looks at increasing our hatchery production as well as our wild salmon recovery. The last bill that you referred to is about captivity. And I've been working on this issue for years and was unable to get the bill out of the Senate under Republican control. I hope it moves now. And what this bill says is that facilities like SeaWorld, who have these orca whale in captivity, these orca whale that in the wild swim hundreds of miles in a day, and keeping them in a fish tank is disgusting, frankly. And now we know that SeaWorld San Diego is phasing out their program, which is a good thing. And that took a lot of pressure. California passed this bill a year ago. I worked with the sponsor down there. We both had the same bill a few years ago. And so now I'm bringing it back under Democratic control, and I hope that that will pass so that in the future, if anybody wants to keep a whale in captivity in Washington State, they will not be able to because it's against the law. Right now, none of our facilities are. So this is a precautionary principle bill, making sure that it doesn't happen in the future because this practice is so inhumane.
Well, thank you. I'm not going to even pretend to be objective about that. And I've been against SeaWorld for a couple decades, so I really appreciate it. Of course, the biggest buzz is about the carbon emissions movement from you and our governor as well. Do you want to just give us a quick explanation?
Yeah, definitely. So the governor's bill, so I have a bill that I've been working on for 9 years, actually.
Oh, man.
And so I went ahead and dropped that bill, recognizing that the governor was going to be dropping one within days of mine being dropped as well. And they are very similar, and plan on doing everything I can to move that bill forward as the vehicle to address climate change in Washington State. It's a comprehensive bill that raises about $1 billion a year. That money will go to areas to offset carbon emissions and to a greener and healthier future for our state. So looking at things like energy efficiency and electric vehicles and so on, but also recognizing that some communities are disproportionately impacted by climate change and by some of the solutions to climate change, too. So making sure that those communities are respected and part of this legislation as well. And unlike years past, we now have some major businesses who are at the table standing shoulder to shoulder with Governor Inslee, myself, Senator Carlisle, and others who are moving this legislation. And those specifically are Puget Sound Energy, and Microsoft, and many others. And so we have some big players from the business world recognizing that it's time, actually it's past time, to take action on carbon.
Carbon emissions impact some communities more than others. Could a carbon emissions bill cost people who are lower class or in poverty more than it would cost other people? And are there any aspects of the bill that could work to help people?
Yes and yes. So yes, some of the solutions to addressing climate change can disproportionately impact some lower income communities. And so the bill is crafted in a very special way to make sure that those issues are addressed. So I'm very comfortable about how the bill positively impacts all of our communities and all Washingtonians.
That's fantastic. One last question. Some people are already complaining that this is another sin tax and Washington State has enough of those. How would you respond to that?
I would say that it is far past time that we take action on carbon. This is not a sin tax. This is the right thing to do. We also recognize that clean air and clean water and healthy forests and healthy marine waters are things that are critical economic drivers to our state. So if our Salish Sea is dying, it represents billions of dollars in economic activity. We know that there are beetle infestations and other infestations, and we know that fire seasons are getting longer and more powerful due to climate change. So climate change does not create fire, but it does create the fire season that will be longer and more stressful to the ecosystem and more powerful and more impactful fires. And so all of these things are very clear indicators of why this is not about us putting some other tax on industry. This is about us having a clean and healthy and economically viable future. And it's absolutely critical that we take these steps. To not do so is unacceptable, absolutely unacceptable.
I know you're working very, very hard today on MLK Day as well as every other day. So I want to thank you so much for the time you took today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on, and I look forward to speaking with you again in the future.